All right, so we're back with another episode of Ask Me Anything. And today we have quite a few interesting questions. Let's head on to the very first one.
Hi, Melvin. I'm single and have two private properties. Both are under my name and I don't have any other names to use. Can you share strategies for me to expand further?
So unfortunately, in Singapore, because of additional buyer stamp duty, you already have two private properties. Either you have paid ABSD or you belong to the ERA Pyro to all these five rounds of additional buyer stamp duty. Maybe you paid a little bit of ABSD in the past. I'm not sure. As a single, you already achieved two prior properties. That's already a good achievement in a sense. If you would like to expand further, then I guess if you're talking about Singapore, the only way will be to look into commercial properties or industrial properties. Do take note that in terms of performance-wise, based on tracking, you need to really find the good ones because for industrial properties, if let's say you're talking about the new ones, they're all below 30 years old. The previous ERA has leases that are below 60 years. Most of our properties right now that belong to the 60-year leases, they're already about 40 plus or 50 years balance lease. A lot of these are categorized into what I personally call them more towards the U play kind of thing, like a rental play kind of concept. And of course, now interest rates are also higher, so you are also affected. So if you really want to look at capital appreciation, then perhaps one divergence is to look at freehold, industrial or commercial properties. Shophouses, of course, has been one of the top of the town for the last few years. But if you talk about true blue commercial shophouses that are categorized with level one being full on commercial, level two and three are also pure commercial status. This kind of shophouses, if you have seen our episodes on our shophouse series, these are already at a new price point because there's been so much liquidity into this kind of shophouses over the pandemic season. This kind of properties cater to international properties. There's no restriction on ABSD. There's no seller stamp duty. A lot of family offices, a lot of private equity funds, they are buying into all these kind of shophouses and you can technically buy and sell the next day. I would say that this kind of shophouses, if let's say you have that 10 over million dollars kind of budget or 20 over million kind of budget, then of course you can explore that kind of range. But let's say if we are talking about properties that is within the range of let's say 1 to 2 million over dollars, then technically the only choice left is to go for industrial properties, office units, retail strata shops, which I will strongly advise you not to go into unless you have really good inherent factors. For example, front road facing, very good human traffic. And of course the exit strategy also makes sense in the sense that when you want to sell, it's easier to sell. And of course, the last category will be HDB shophouses, which technically most of the HDB shophouses in Singapore, they're already less than about 50 years old. So unfortunately in Singapore, because of additional buyer stamp duty, residential properties being one of the most hot favorite because in terms of transaction volume, residential properties are the highest across board. This has already been restricted and we are left with this other various options. And of course, the last option is to look for overseas, which if you have not seen my previous episode, look at Ask Me Anything, episode 1 and 2. I talk about overseas properties as well. So I hope that that helps you because that will be the strategy to own your third property. However, before I go on to the second question, so the other point of view is that instead of the first option, which is to look at a third property, the second perspective is to look at your two current properties that you're holding right now and see if they are performing to your level of expectation. Because if let's say one of the property has stagnated in terms of price growth, or maybe they are growing at a slower pace compared to the past or compared to some of the other kind of properties out there. And let's say, for example, one, you are staying in it and you're happy with it, but the other one, let's say, is not performing. Or maybe the one that you're staying in is not performing well, but the one that you have been renting out is still appreciating at a very healthy pace. Then you might want to look at restructuring either one of the property. But there again, the moment you start to restructure just one of it, you'll be taxed with the latest ABSD for the second property. So in order to do that, you might have to restructure both. That means think about whether do you want to divest both, go into a large one, or to reset it in the sense that to take out all your capital, pump it into an asset that after analysis, it has a better kind of speed of appreciation for your capital. So this framework, in summary, is basically to look at investment horizon because we technically only have a few couple of cycles before we reach the age 55. So it's very importantly look at your cycle, look at your TDSR, look at your loan tenor that's balanced, and then try to hit that sweet spot that hopefully will work for you.
How about ABSD? Can only one of the couple own the HDB while the other couple own the condo?
So this question pertains to the previous episode that I talked about. So a couple can own a HDB and a condo. However, you have to start it in the right manner. That means the procedure has to be started correctly. So what is the wrong procedure? Let me talk about the wrong procedure first. If you buy a condo first as a couple, even though you are buying with one name and maybe the other couple don't own anything because you're planning to buy a second property, can the other couple go and buy a HDB? No, you can't. If let's say you already own a condo, can you go back and buy a HDB while still owning your condo and buying the HDB with two names? You can't. In summary, the moment you touch a private property in Singapore, and take note, the moment you purchase an overseas residential property in any part of the world, you are not allowed to buy a HDB concurrently. And the only way for you to own a HDB is to sell off the overseas residential private property, to sell off the Singapore private residential property. So you need to sell off your condo, you need to sell off a landed. You need to wait for 15 months, then you can buy a HDB. So that is the only way to reset. The 15 months rule, of course, applies to two key parameters. If you're above 55, you don't need to wait for 15 months because you're above 55, it falls under the ruling whereby you have exemption if you buy a HDB that is below 4-room category. So let's say now you own a private property, you sell it off, you're 56 years old, you and your wife, and then you can immediately buy a HDB that is 4-room or 3-room in the resale market. So there's no restriction if you're above 55. If you're below 55, you have to wait for 15 months, you go and rent first, then you can buy a HDB under any category. So that is, of course, that ruling right there. So what is the way to start correctly if you want to own a HDB and a condo? You can do that. So what is the right way to do it? I explained in that full video. Watch that entire clip. You'll understand the key fundamental pros and cons of using that method to own a HDB and a condo. But let me just summarize it here for you. It is to start off with the HDB first. But there's two methods. Number one is to use the owner occupier method. That means one of the spouse is the owner, one of the spouse is the essential occupier. 5 years later, you can buy a private property without selling the HDB. So this is the rental play method. So you can hold on to the HDB because you need to fulfill the MOP, and both spouses need to fulfill the MOP. The spouse that is the essential occupier can buy the condo without ABSD. However, the downside is that if the policy changes, this whole thing might not be possible anymore, because let's say 3 years later, suddenly HDB come out and say that, hey, this owner occupier method, we do not want them to own any private properties. If you want to own private property, we also require you to divest away your HDB. You need to sell your HDB. So of course, that is subject to the HDB policy change. At this point in time, it's still workable, right? Number two is that if you use this method, take note that when you purchase a HDB, only the person's name that is in the HDB will be subjected to the income kind of qualification and eligibility. That means the other person, TPF cannot be used, income will not be taken into consideration for the loan for this HDB property. So this is something to take note. But this is the only way to own a HDB and a condo without incurring ABSD for the condo. Now, the second method is to buy the HDB with two names. If you have already owned it with two names, can you still buy a condo? You can. However, when you buy a condo, because two names are in the HDB, you have to pay ABSD for the condo. And also take note that the LTV will be affected if your HDB is not fully paid. So if you have not fully paid your HDB, LTV for the condo, 45%. If you have fully paid your HDB, LTV for condo, 75%. So this is in summary. There's a lot more details. Head back to the video. I hope that will answer your question. Now, third question.
Can a PR own HDB and condo at the same time?
So for PRs, unfortunately, you can't, because for a PR, the policy is that if you already own a HDB, you want to buy a condo, you can do that, but you need to sell off your HDB within 6 months of owning or purchasing the condo. So take note, for PRs, you also have ABSD of 5%. And for PRs to buy HDB, you can only buy HDB resale. And the second qualification is that you must be a PR status for at least 3 years. And that applies to you and your spouse. So let's say if you are a PR for 5 years, but your spouse is a PR for 1 year, you cannot buy a HDB resale. You can only buy a HDB resale if you and your missus or you and your hubby both exceeds 3 years of PR status. Then, of course, let's say after staying in the HDB resale for 5 years, you want to buy another condominium, you can. You need to sell your HDB, then you go ahead and buy the condo. All right?
I've just passed 30 with a fiancé, combined income about 300k thereabouts. I've just bought a new launch EC, and we have an ambition to purchase a freehold landed once we reach MOP for the EC. We do not need the landed to be a Cat 1 landed. A Cat 3 or Cat 4 would do. A Cat 3 with A&A, ideally Cat 4 with rebuild, though we also not rising construction causes. Land plot size, ideally about 1,006 square feet will do, but 1,003 square feet will do as well. Can we ask, how much should we increase our income to afford a freehold landed that size in 9 years down the road, or how much should we save for a down payment, A&A, or rebuild loan?
So congratulations, you just passed 30 years old. And of course, with your fiancé's income, you have about 300,000, I presume it's per annum. You already bought a new launch EC, congratulations as well. So your question is that you have an aspiration to purchase a freehold landed once you reach MOP. So of course, that will be probably about 9 years later, because your EC perhaps takes 3 to 4 years to build. And once you collect the keys, your 5 years MOP, you will need to fulfill from the TOP date until the 9th year period. So I'll just take an assumption of 4 years construction for your new launch EC, 5 years MOP. That is 9 years later, which 2024 plus 9 will be 2033, correct? Okay, thanks, Marilyn. You hope to go for a Cat 3 and Cat 4 condominium. So for the purpose of our audience, let's look at Cat 3 and Cat 4. Let me just launch the slides from webinar number 18, the one that me and Beatrice did. If you have not seen our webinars before, we did 18 rounds of webinars in 2023. Two of them were live debate events this year. We're also coming out with a range of webinars. And by this time, I think on our website, you can head over to propertyinbuzz.com. There's a webinar button right here at the top right-hand corner. Click on it. You'll be able to see the full schedule for the year. And usually we'll release the next 2 to 3 webinars dates for you to sign up. Once you sign up, basically you'll be notified the moment the webinar dates are out. Take notes. Usually for webinars, we give away a lot of different freebie tools as well as frameworks. Do head on to our webinars to learn more. We hope to see you soon. And of course, just a quick shout out is that our PRB tech team has came up with various ranges of tools. And these are all tools that are very, very, I think, useful for home buyers and sellers like yourself. So for example, if you're a home seller, you can use a sales proceed calculator and that will bring you to the whole tabulation. You want to check out how much equity term you can take out for existing property, decoupling calculator, timeline planning, everything is right here. Affordability mortgage loan calculator, your TDSR check. If you're buying a new launch, your progressive payment. If you want to pledge to get more loan, how much do you need to put in? Timeline, everything is right here. Stamp duty. We also have launched recently our Journey Maker as well as our PLB analysis tool. We'll talk about that in another segment, but these are fantastic tools that our consultants have in order to help our clients make decisions. Let me come back to the question. So basically, you're asking about categorization. So let me share with you Cat 1 to 4. And Cat 1 to 4, of course, I think that is very good forward planning because I think you're trying to plan forward in the sense that you want to think about by that time when you have hit your MOP, what should you do if you want to go for a landed property? Of course, that might mean that you need to decouple, take out one name, or you might need to sell your EC and then go into a landed property. Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3, Cat 4. Technically speaking, I think in 9 years down the road, my assumption is that because landed properties, they tend to move in a 5-year cycle. Every 5 years on the 5th year mark, now we're in the midpoint of the fire cycle. My own forecast is that by year 2025, we're going to see another kind of like a sharp run up. Rationale is because the fire cycle coincides with QE, quantitative easing, as well as interest rates movement. So this year in 2024, what's going to happen is that US is going to have its election. Singapore is having election as well. It coincides with the fact that we have already pivoted in terms of Fed interest rates and now it's going to come down. And of course, a lot of analysts has already forecast that it's going to come down, perhaps Q2, Q3 or Q4 this year. And usually, real estate takes a lagger effect from the interest rates effect as well as the stock market. So what's going to happen if, let's say, stocks, if let's say the equity market were to rise, most of the behavior syndrome is that people will take margin and take profit and then they will try to shift those margins from the equity markets, the bonds market, or in terms of other more liquid assets because it will get increasingly volatile once the stock market goes up too high because of low interest rate or when QE floods in, people will usually rest their capital into a more illiquid asset and a stable asset, for example, like real estate. So usually real estate takes like a lagger effect. My own forecast is that in 2025, landed property should see another kind of like a run up. Of course, that is barring circumstances of no new cooling measures in Singapore because Singapore is different. But by that time, 2033, the pricing will be very different. Construction costs, I believe, will be different as well. It really depends by then when you're ready to try and see whether Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3 or Cat 4 makes sense, because sometimes Cat 4 makes sense. For example, there was a year which is in 2023, last year, Cat 4 makes more sense than going for Cat 1 because Cat 4 sees a 20% increment compared to Cat 1, which is a 33% increment from the original Cat 1 in 2021. So this concept is to spot the disparity across the gaps in a certain district and a certain landed enclave. And why is it making sense for Cat 4? Is because if you were to go for Cat 1, you're technically helping the previous owner of this home to make 33% compared to you who have bought it in 2021 for Cat 1 at 3 million. I mean, even though you buy at 4 million, you're helping them to make 33%. So this, even though it's at 6 million, but the increment from 5 million is only 20%. And even if you do buy Cat 1 at 4 million, by the time you do up a new home, you add in 1.5 million, two years of, let's say, rental costing, plus all the approvals, you want to add in future proof items, maybe it will amount to 5.8 or close to $6 million as well for InterTerrace. So you might as well hunt for those four categories InterTerrace in this particular example. So that's what we're talking about. So in 2033, perhaps by that time, you can also contact us. I believe we'll still be in business, hopefully. You can, of course, I mean, chat with us. We'll be very happy to check in with you to see what will be the best plan moving forward.
Do you treat all condos and resale ECs in the same way?
Good question. In the past, because ECs were like a very new thing, that was probably about 15 years ago, ECs were introduced during the crossfire season together with DBSS. Now DBSS is already no more. So ECs, they are subject to the HDB policies when they launch. They are subjected to a longer kind of MOP period. They are subjected to an MOP period compared to condos which has no MOP period. Both properties, whether is it a new launch EC or condo, they are subjected to seller stamp duty. But if you notice, if you buy a new launch condo, the moment you walk into the show flat, 4 years later, if you collect your keys, you can sell it already, right? Even within that construction period, you can also sub-sale it because there's no restriction. Let's say you want to sell tomorrow, you can. You just pay seller stamp duty, right? But it doesn't make sense. Seller stamp duty now is 3 years, 12%, 8%, 4%. So most people, even though they buy a new launch condo, they will sell only after 3 years. But for new launch ECs, you can't do that. You basically need to wait for TOP plus 5 years. So most of the time, the waiting period is 9 years. So that's the only downside. Other than that, the behavior is the same as condos. So right now, if you look across board, technically, I seldom get this question anymore. In the past, yes, people seem to be a little bit concerned. Hey, this used to be an executive condominium. It is launched by HDB. Just to clarify, it is not launched by HDB. It is launched by a private developer. It's fully built by a private developer. The land was bid by a private developer. The only thing is that when government introduced the land through GLS and developer bid it, they will categorize it as an EC land plot. So when developers bid it, technically, the mindset of bidding it is that they will know that the bidding price will have to be of a lower kind of PSF land bid PPR compared to a normal condominium because they know that the audience that is buying the EC will be smaller than the audience that potentially can buy the condominiums. Why? Because the new launch ECs is subjected to eligibility condition of HDB. You need to be of a family nucleus. You need to be of a certain citizenship. It's not open to like full-on foreigners that you can just purchase the ECs like that. So because of that, the land bid price is lower and thus developer will bid lower. And they also know that the waiting time is longer. So most of the time, because of that 9 years waiting time, ECs tend to see a healthy gain in terms of profit margin because the owners have waited for 9 years. Because in 9 years, everything rises, right? 9 years is equivalent to a normal condo's three cycles. Normal condo, you have 3 years, 3 years, 3 years. An EC is 9 years. Technically speaking, after 9 years, a resale EC behaves exactly the same as a normal condominium. Just have a look at maybe Buangkok, right? Buangkok, you have Esperina Residences. It's performing fantastically well. Now in the resale market, nobody even asks whether it was an EC or a condominium. It just behaves like the same. In short, we compare them in the resale market as similar products.
I recently sold my BTO and I'm going to stay with my in-laws for the next 2 to 3 years to save up for an EC or landed. What is the best advice for me to start on my private property journey? This is mostly for investment.
Congratulations. If you sold a BTO, perhaps you have waited 4 years, 5 years for construction, another 5 years for MOP. I don't know what is your current age category right now, but let me just assume that maybe you bought a BTO in your late 20s. Now you are in your late 30s or maybe early 40s, right? So I think there's two ways of looking at this plan. You want to buy a private property to kickstart your journey, right? So let's assume that you're 40 years old. Usually by 54, you need to make your last move for the property that you're going to live in because after 55, if you do not fulfill minimum sum, the amount of restriction usage on CPF for the next property will be restricted. So most people, they make the final move on 54 years old. From 40 to 54, you technically have about 14 years. You can do maybe 4, 8, 12, maybe about 3 different in and outs in the sense that maybe every 4 years you can sell and buy a private property. It depends, right? So let's say if you want to go for a condominium, you have 3 cycles to go. It really depends what is your overall down payment that's available and your TDSR and your overall loan quantum to think about whether should you go for a resale EC, a resale condo, a new launch condo, or a landed property. My own suggestion is that if your down payment plus your loan quantum qualifies you for going into a landed property, let's say an inter-terrace, $4 over million, or let's say a semi-D, $5 over million, or $6 million in certain OCR district, then by all means, please go for a landed property because the supply is limited. There's no more new supply. There's a lot of old money that is trapped in the landed space. A lot of the owners have extremely good holding power. They do not need to be urgent to sell. The stability is strong. The growth, I would say, it will be stronger if, let's say, you can find the right kind of landed property because you are owning two things at the same time. You are owning the land and you're owning the structure on top of it. And I'm talking about freehold and 999 years landed homes. So that is, of course, a whole new topic. But in terms of just comparing these two assets, there's only 73,000 landed compared to 370,000 condos right now. These two, in comparison, go for the one that is more limited in terms of overall inventory. However, if you do want to go for something that has like a better rental yield, because for landed properties, rental yield will be lower because the quantum is big. Usually, if you can get 2%, you should be very happy. Condominiums, you can still get about 3 to 4% over. If you buy something near to the MRT, good facilities, tenants like it, popular. And of course, there are also condos that perform very well. So always hunt for the one that in our case, we call it the quadrant 2 kind of condominium. So in terms of our framework, we always look for the quadrant 2 kind of properties. That means the condos with high appreciation potential characteristics. Quadrant 1, landed is a capital play. Quadrant 2 is that it is a capital play, but at the same time, the rental yield is also very, very decent. Try to avoid quadrant 3 and 4. Quadrant 3 are usually condos that stagnate, but very good for rental play. Quadrant 4 are properties that stagnate and rental play is no good as well. So try to go for 2 if, let's say, you prefer condos. And I think because this there's no like a further details, that's the advice that I can give you for now. Okay, so I saw that last statement is mostly for investment. So I think that's great. That means you might want to think about whether your strategy in terms of like a capital or rental, which is more important for you, because there's also this framework to take note of, is that when it comes to properties, the four classes of property investment. So the moment you touch the first type of property, that the price don't grow and the renter don't grow, your yield is going to be negative. The moment you touch a property that the price grows and the renter can cover your installment, largely, not maybe not all, maybe you still need to top up a little bit or with MCST, this is going to be a three-star kind of property investment. So you need to know what is like your main priority. Of course, the assumption is that everybody hopes for class number 4, which is you do see capital upside and you see rental that's being able to cover most of the property as well. So this is just an example. What will look like in 5 years time, if let's say you buy a property that's $2 million, in 5 years time, it appreciates to $2.5 million. And largely, your rental can cover most of the installment. You just need to top up MCSC. And what's going to happen is that if you put in $100,000 cash, $470,000 CPF for this $2 million property, you take a 75% loan at $1.5 million. In 5 years time, if it appreciates to $2.5, when you sell it, you're going to extract out $555,000 in cash, $532,000 in terms of CPF, and that will build a new portfolio of about $1.08 million compared to an initial capital that is combining $570,000. So from $570,000 to $1.08 million, that's almost like a double in terms of your capital. And this calculation is based on after lessing off all fees, even your rental agency fees, your property tax, your bank loan interest, your CPF accrued interest, everything is all calculated right here. So if you want to see more examples, of course, you can come for our PRB consults. We'll be very happy to share more with you. All right, so we've come to the end of our Ask Me Anything episode. Do keep your questions coming in through our NOTG comment section. You can, of course, email us as well at this email link. And if you have a very long question, you want to give us more details, scenarios, just type out an email for us. We'll be very happy to chat in with you. Also, head on to our NOTG Instagram page. You can also DM us. We'll be very happy to chat with you as well. And most importantly, if you want to come for like a private consultation with our PRB consultants at our PRB office, we'll be very happy to make arrangement for you to meet up with you. And once again, my name is Melvin Lim. We hope to see you on the next NOTG episode. Take care.